Last day of science class! Yeah! School's almost out! That's not actually that exciting in here, is it? School's almost ready to start. I'd rather stay here for a long, long time. This morning, I know some people just pointed out, now you said you were going to start with the demo, and the demo will be coming really quickly. I want to finish up a point I was making because it's an incredibly important point, I feel, that we need to understand, and so we're going to make sure that we solidify that point. We were on a couple of quotes by some different people, and this one here, if a person doesn't think there is a God, this is what Jeffrey Dahmer said, if a person doesn't think there is a God to be accountable to, then what's the point of trying to modify your behavior to keep it within acceptable ranges? That's how I thought anyway. I always believed the theory of evolution is truth, that we all just came from the slime, when we die, you know, that was it. There is nothing, Jeffrey Dahmer. And Jeffrey Dahmer, the people were pointing out, maybe we should talk about him a little bit. I don't really want to. Very much, but he was a homosexual. But according to his psychologist, he hated himself and he hated people that he would sin with, and so he killed a lot of them. I think it was 15, I think, and who knows. He did horrible things to them. Collected trophies and. Things like this. The point was made that in prison we have accounts and people talk about that he'd had a conversion and that he was baptized by immersion in the whirlpool. And I hope that's good. And we're all judged by God and so we're not going to judge him. There's some horrible things there, but everything can be forgiven. But you don't get that through evolution. And that was what he was trying to claim when he was talking about this. His father had kind of left the church and had not brought him up in this way, and he believed that evolution was true, and then if evolution's true, then there's no moral authority, and you can do whatever you want. And his actions, he said, came straight out of his belief on evolution. And so we're going to take him at his word for that, that evolution can bring these evils. The other one we had there was Eric Harris, who was one of the shooters at Columbine High School, which is one of the things that really affect me a lot. We do a lot of different things differently in the high schools, and a lot of times in the spring, around April 20th, in that time period, we get nervous because there's an amazing amount of things that have happened in around April 19th and April 20th that are not good things. It's kind of one of those weird weird dates of where things happen, and Hitler's birthday and the Oklahoma City bombing, and just a lot of things have happened around that time. And so we always, around that time, have these big meetings on what we're going to do in case of a lockdown and things like this. But Eric Harris was an adherent to evolution, and as you can see on the shirt that day that he killed people, he had natural selection on there, and you've all heard the story about him asking the girl, you know, do you believe in God and Jesus Christ? And she said, I do, and he killed her. This is what comes from evolution. There is a book that came out in 1999, and I had been talking a lot with Charles about various things, I ran out of time, so I was going to include those things yesterday, and he was going to include some of that stuff too, and I'm glad he did, so I'm going to not include it as much, hopefully. So he covered a lot of these things pretty good. But there was a book in 1999 called Biological Exuberance, Animal Homosexuality and Natural Diversity, and the book was examining homosexual behavior in animals. And the book basically was trying to propose that, really, two points. Number one, homosexuality is natural because it occurs in other animals. So that's what evolution puts us in the animal kingdom. So homosexuality, if we see this happening in various other animals, then it is a natural thing for us also. And the other point they're trying to make is that evolution, it comes out of genetics. It's actually an evolved state. because it's a beneficial mutation, and they've tried, and I think Charles mentioned this a little bit, about trying to look at the brain, different size of cells and things. You've heard this, about trying to make it be kind of a genetic thing, that it's a beneficial mutation so as to lessen reproduction of a species, because we have a population problem, right? I mean, you know, God hasn't taken all this into account. Because there is no God. So what are we going to do? And we need to always limit our population. And therefore, this is a beneficial mutation that would always arise in an organism society to actually limit then reproduction. So that's a good thing that they can't have children. I don't know how this trait propagates. According to their theory that they're trying to propose, what's the mechanism of it propagating through? And that's, of course, that they have some problems with certain questions like that when they're trying to do these things. The evolutionary agenda, there is an agenda, is to remove the moral authority of God and Jesus Christ. This is why it was created. This is why it is. And these are the things that come out of it, and there's probably more. Just as the quotes that we read, these are the fruit that evolution bears. Abortion, racism, eugenics, murder, genocide. Anybody know what that last one is? I'll just ask the kids first. Anybody know what that last one is there? GLBTQ? Anybody know? I would imagine you have it in your schools. There's a club. Anybody know? Gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. It actually is queer. It actually is, but there's a lot of... If you Google this and look it up, and you just, you know, take my word for it, that is what it was originally, but what it stands for is for people that are just confused and questioning what they are. But the Q then originally is supposed to be queer, but what we have, in, at least in Iowa schools, and I know at Urbandale, our club has kind of changed that to be questioning. So a lot of times the Q is for questioning, but it originally, and a lot of times I think it still is in most places, it does stand for queer. It's questioning, query, too. You know, it's you're questioning what you are. And you know, we have this in our school. And I get the announcement and when they're meeting, and this is what's happened. This is what it's come out of. And unfortunately, sometimes even when people are young, there's almost kind of a coolness about it. You know, I'm going to go because I'm tolerant. You know, I'm not actually any of these things. I mean, there's some people in the club that aren't any of these things. But they go because they want to show that I'm tolerant and I'm accepting, and we can all get along, and that we can all be happy on this. Evolution and science places man in the animal kingdom because that is where they want to be. That is where they want to be. Because if I'm in the animal kingdom, raw, lustful, instinctive emotions, these are fun. These make me feel good. I'm not accountable to a higher power. And they will mock us, for being ignorant of our place in the animal kingdom. If you say you're not part of the animal kingdom, you will be mocked. I have been mocked for saying that. And you will be too. And I used this slide before, but I'm going to put it up here again. Jude, verse 10. Yet these men speak abusively against whatever they do not understand. They don't understand God, and they don't have the spirit of truth within them that helps them understand that. And what things they do understand by instinct, that's what they understand by instinct, like unreasoning animals, these are the very things that will destroy them. Animals. And that's the main point I wanted to get, and I wanted to end with that point yesterday, that we need to understand that we can't just say that, oh, it's just another thing. No, it's not. It is a work. It's a tool of the devil. And these are the things that come out of it. These are the things that come out of it. Evil will produce more evil. Okay, we're going to do a demo. And I really wish I would have got to this, because Mike Manny really started kind of hitting on, I thought, if I would have done that demo, that would have, what he was saying right now would have been really, we could have used that. But he's talking about organ pipes and different, different pitches we can make on different, basically... music and Mike might not want to hear this, but music is primarily all math and science, really. It comes down to that's what it is. I do a whole unit on sound, and we talk about, you know, a C being just 256 vibrations per second is what it is. And you can make a lot of things play that pitch, that frequency. Basically, it comes down to the matter of how much mass or matter you're actually vibrating. The more mass you vibrate, the lower the pitch. The more the lower the frequency will be. And then if we have small things that are vibrating, then we're going to have a higher pitch. So I used to play the saxophones, and so if I have all the keys open, I'm vibrating a pretty short column of air. It'll be a fairly high note, and I can just start closing up tubes or holes all the way down, and I just make a longer column of air. That's what I'm doing. Then I'm going to have a lower note. I can go all the way down the scale if I go down. I have a tuning fork here. Can you see it vibrates? Look really blurry. 512 vibrations per second, that is, right there. And that would be then, if I said that the middle C was 256 vibrations per second, this is 512, that's what? That's double, right? And if whenever you double, you go up one octave, you actually double the frequency. You're going to vibrate your vocal cords twice as fast when you're going to sing one octave up. I believe music is all based on the A, though. I think it's, you can set the notes really whatever, how many vibrations per second you want. I think music goes by 440, and I don't know, is that right, Mike? And I don't know.
A440.
Okay. I'll let you talk about that then. Explain that to us the rest of the way. So what I have here is I have a different tuning fork, and this one, there's some tuning forks that have sliders on it. You can change the frequency on it, but this one is, you know, it's going to be that note. There's nothing really I can do it. It's uniform. It's just going to be that way. That's what it's going to vibrate, and I can't really change the frequency of this particular thing. I have another thing I want to vibrate, and it's this column of air right here. All this other stuff is just magic. Don't worry about it. Okay, it looks really fancy. There's nothing really fancy here. This demo might not even be that impressive to you, even though I like this analogy the best. So there's a column of air right here, and I want to vibrate this column of air. What I have here is I can move this up, and then the water C will come up. So I have a smaller column of air. So I can change the column of air that I'm going to try to vibrate. And every column of air then has a different natural frequency of vibration that it vibrates at. Okay? And so what we have in physics is something called resonance, where if I take something and I start it vibrating, that if there's something nearby that actually has that same natural frequency, then it can actually start vibrating. It seems like it's magic. It's not. It's sound waves going through and then bumping up. It's like when the opera singer breaks the glass. You remember that in Mythbusters? You ever watch Mythbusters? Great show. They will go up against that, and the piece of crystal will start going like that, and will start saying, "That's my natural frequency," and then it'll shatter. Okay? And so we can actually then start things vibrating that they will resonate with each other really, really well if it's the same natural frequency. So I have no way of playing this, even though it has a certain natural frequency. I have no way of playing this. But what I can do is I can hit the tuning fork, I can put it over the top, have the sound waves go down in it, and once I get the right column of air, though, even though I can't really play this, you should hear a difference in the tuning fork, because working together, when these things are aligned and resonating with each other, we can hear a much louder and good sound. So, we're going to try this out here. Hear it? Do I have to move this up, or can you hear that? We'll go back down, see if you can hear it again. You hear that? That gives me oohs and ahs out of that, but that's what it is. Thanks. Now it looks like I'm begging for... That was just a token ooh and aah. Okay. Anyway, I like this one. There's a lot of demos, and the reason I'm doing this is because there's a lot of demos I do on an everyday basis, and you need to find time to meditate in your lives. You really do. And I'm blessed to be half an hour away from my school, because I can do a lot of meditation there, a lot of meditation on the way home. But I really enjoy, there's something just, I feel like I'm being kind of sneaky about it. sneaking in my meditation. Right in the middle of a class, I'm going to do a demonstration like this. And all these demonstrations I ever do, and I have a whole bunch more that were probably more exciting, but I can't bring in natural gas and some things like this. I always have something in my mind connected to every demo I ever do. And so when I'm doing this for the class, I think about what that means to me. And that's great. I mean, it really helps. It really helps me in my life. And what I always think about in this one is, well, what is the analogy here? Does anybody know what the analogy is here? Can anybody figure it out? This is unchanging, right? What's my will? Do I have control over my will? I can change it. And what can I do with it? I can align it with something that's unchanging. And I can align it. And when I align it, it works. It works through me. This is the way it is. 1 John 5:14 through 15, which is some of my favorite verses. This helped me with the passing of my mother. 1 John 5:14 through 15. I offer it to you. This is the confidence we have in approaching God. That if we ask anything according to His will, if we align ourselves with His will, He hears us. And this is a faith thing. You have to believe that. You have to believe that. And then the verse 15 is something that a lot of people, I think, that don't align their wills with God, don't understand this last part. And this is where they kind of make fun of us. It says, and if we know that He hears us, if you know it, if you believe it, that He hears you, then whatever we ask, we know that we have what we asked of Him. Now, is that true or not? And there's a lot of people that think, well, I'm going to pray, and I pray for certain things, and you know, God didn't give it to me. He chose not to give it to me. I don't believe that. If you have confidence and you approach God that you know He hears you, and whatever you ask, you did receive it. Now, you might not have received it the way you thought it was supposed to be received, but you received it. And this helps us through troublesome times. People that aren't in the Lord don't have this and do not understand this. And they think, I prayed and I prayed and I prayed and I didn't get what I needed. It's a mindset. It's a mindset. But I prayed and prayed and prayed that God would take my mom's cancer away. And He did. He did. It wasn't quite what I thought would end up the way it was. But He did. In the Garden of Eden, what was the lie? What did the devil say? Thou shalt not surely die. And then through evolution, what is the devil lying about to us? All there is nothing. And you're all going to die. And that's it. That's a lie too. Thou shalt die now. That's what evolution. Thou shalt die. I prayed for God to take my mother's cancer away. And He did. The cancer died. And people say, well, yeah, but your mom died. No, she did not. She did not. That's a lie. Evolution says that that's what's going to happen. That's it. It's the end. That's a lie. She lived on. And she lives on. This is what happens when we align our will with God. Very important to understand that and have the confidence. You ask what God, you're going to, if you have your will aligned, you are going to get that. You're going to get that. We're going to go to some questions. I got a whole bunch of questions here, and some more just came in here a little bit, and I want to look at those for the rest of the time. The rest of the time, we're going to race to the end and go through a whole bunch of different questions. There's two questions I have here that are very similar, so I want to kind of just read them both. When others ask about why we don't believe things, such as evolution, and are very interested in overcoming our beliefs, is it better just to say that they can't change our mind? Sometimes I find I'm trying to convince them of my beliefs. And the other one that I want to read is, how should students respond to questions about evolution on tests? And I think we should stand up for what we believe in. I do believe that it's important to be informed. If the devil's working at you with certain tools, Let's not just be naive and not be able to know we need to know what they believe. I believe we do. We need to know what they believe. But I had a lot of tests on questions, and sometimes I just said, I literally wrote on the test, I think this is really dumb, but, or I just totally disregard this, but this is what you want me to say, or the evolutionists believe this. Then there's things you can do and say that, and it's up to you on how you want to answer those questions. But I would never put on there that I believe it. I'd always put on there the evolutionists feel that this is the way that this has happened. If you want to make comments about it, and this is a sin, then you can go ahead and do that. And be brave, and argue for God. 1 Peter 3:15 says we need to be prepared to give an answer for the hope that is within you. And I think that that means knowing how the devil is going to be working against us too. This one is on a napkin. Do you think God made some animals just to confuse us? And I that might have been some comments I made about the platypus. I'm not quite sure, but I do know that the Bible says that God is not the author of confusion. I believe God made some animals to amaze us, is what he did. And we know that confusion, if you were listening Wednesday night to Steve Wright, anybody know, God's not the author of confusion. Who's the author of confusion? Devil is the author of confusion, right? Satan's the author of confusion. If you look at James chapter 3, verse 12, and then I'll skip down a little bit, but verse 12 intrigues me. Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries? Can a grapevine bear figs? Can a red-headed child end up with a red salamander? It's kind of just, the seeds within itself, there's different varieties. But if you go down, drop on down to verse 15 and 16, this kind of wisdom cometh not from above, but is earthly, sensual, devilish. Isn't that a good description? Earthly, sensual, devilish. For where envying and strife is, there is confusion and every evil work. The confusion comes from the devil. And there's many tools that he uses, as Steve pointed out Wednesday night. And the last one is, my kids and I are really, really interested to know about the dinosaurs and what happened to them. And so we're going to talk about the dinosaurs for a little bit. We'll start with that. Notice how we have these visions of Noah's Ark. Noah's Ark probably didn't quite look like what we expected, and I would love to see the animals that were actually on that too. But I'm always really curious about how that would work. This is several years ago. I had to speak on basically the topic was Jurassic Park. Jurassic Ark is what it was. Please explain the dinosaurs in 20 minutes. And when I got, I flew through that thing. I'm not sure people, I thought they probably thought I was speaking in tongues, but I finally sat down and my son turned over to me and goes, "Dude, you spoke for an hour." So I went to Charles and Greg and I apologized, and they said, "You just need more time." And so thus my punishment. This is what's happened. So I know a lot of you probably have your favorite dinosaurs, Tyrannosaurus Rex or the Velociraptors. These are my favorite here. These are nice, cuddly little... Charles mentioned he had a Facebook. So this is Triceratom. I was going to put Tom Dennis in there because there's a picture of Tom Dennis in that picture with you guys. And Tom Dennis, I'd never seen Tom Dennis that young. He looked completely different, really. This is Triceratom and Thesaurus Fry. I asked Charles to dress up in a Barney outfit for me to do a demonstration. He said he'd have to probably beat himself up if he did that or something. So we did this instead. And Mike Manning, you have no idea how lucky you did to escape. Because my son, he had some ideas, and he couldn't find you, but you were going to be a dinosaur with a Bugs Bunny hand conducting both of these in their song about family. Family, yes. Okay. You're going to be Mycodactyl, if you wanted to know. So, okay. Sorry about that. It's my last chance. Okay, so if we're looking at the dinosaurs, you know, the question alone demonstrates our fascination with them, doesn't it? You know, I mean, what happened to dinosaurs? Well, what happened to a lot of creatures? What happened to a lot of animals? You know, why does it have to be Jurassic Park? What about Platypus Park? That would have been a pretty amazing movie. The reason is because they're extinct. They're extinct, and some of them seem to be pretty big. So they're kind of an amazing. We have a fascination with them, and I do too. I think they're pretty. It's pretty amazing. It's, you know, it's just the handiwork of God once again. What does the Bible say about the dinosaurs? Well, if you look in Genesis 1:20 through 25, we have the fifth and the sixth day of creation. We have great creatures that were made. This is a Hebrew word, as tannin. In the King James Version, it calls them whales, but they were a whale of an animal. That's for sure. So we have these creatures that, you know, some were small, some could have been pretty big. We know that they were herbivores. By the way, by now you have the idea that, yes, I think they existed. So I'm a science person. I'm not totally stupid. So I see evidence of some pretty big things. We know they were herbivores, Genesis 1:29 through 30. A lot of people, when you hear that, they say, well, yeah, but I mean, don't they have sharp teeth? The teeth argument is pretty lame. I mean, you know, there could be some people with pretty dull teeth that you still don't want to get bitten by. And even over time, you know, depending on what you're eating, your teeth can sharpen. I was thinking also about Charles talking about piercings, tattoos, you know, bodily changes. You know, there's people that do teeth sharpening. You know, you remember the band Twisted Sister? Don't you? We didn't listen to them, but anyway, their lead singer Dee Snider, I don't know if you remember him or not, but he did that. He sharpened these two teeth, and actually recently there's been a lot of people doing that because of this vampire nuts stuff. They've been sharpening their teeth to look like it, you know. But you know, what about the panda? The panda has really sharp teeth. Well, the panda eats bamboo, right? I mean, and so it needs sharp teeth. So even sharp teeth is really not a designation of whether it's not a herbivore or a carnivore. And most people now admit that anyway. But we know in Genesis 9:1-3 that they became afraid of man. The fear and the dread of you will fall upon all the beasts of the earth, and all the birds of the air, upon every creature that moves around the ground, upon all the fish of the sea. They are given into your hands. Of course, these don't make for really good movies, right? I mean, you're not going to have Jurassic Park, and you're not going to go, hey, there's a Velociraptor, shoo, shoo, you know, and it runs away. I mean, what fun is that going to be? I mean, that's not going to work. So we make these amazing creatures. We draw them. We don't really know that they look like these things. We just draw them. We draw them really big. We draw them ferocious and just all kinds of crazy stuff. And we put them in a movie, and then everybody believes it's true. You know, that's my problem with movies. I like watching some movies, but that is my problem. It's just amazing how people say, well, it's true. I saw it in a movie. I mean, I have kids that think that way. You know, they see it in the movie, and it's right. It has to be true. When were the dinosaurs named? By Adam? Okay. Genesis 2:20 says, so the man gave names to all the livestock, cattle, the birds of the air, and all the beasts of the field. So if the dinosaurs are included in there somewhere, possibly the beasts of the field, probably is maybe where I'd put them if they're in there, then they were named by Adam. Apparently Adam didn't name every single thing. We don't have a mention of things in the sea being named by him, but we have birds, we have like domesticated kind of things, and we have wild kind of things, which I assumed that the dinosaurs would be. It's another thing Charles said the other day, is like, you know, people, the evolutionists really try to change things around, but when they find a dinosaur with a saddle on it, how are they going to explain that one? So that was pretty good. That would be really interesting. So maybe we can just go put one on it and see what they do. Some original names, whether Adam gave them these particular names, you know, probably, were what? What are some of the original names of these ginormous creatures? Leviathan and Behemoth. Where do we go to read that? Right at the end of Job, right? Job 40 and 41. I was going to spend some time reading that, but I sometimes tend to run long. So I don't want to, but those are really good chapters. Really good chapters to read. You might want to go through and read that. I will make a comment that if you go to those chapters right now, Job 40 and 41 in your Bible, I can almost guarantee you that somewhere down on chapter 40, down at the bottom or something, it'll say something like, possibly the elephant. If you're a person that doesn't mind writing in your Bible, I would just go and cross that out. Because once you read, if you're a third grader and you read chapter 40, you're going to realize that's not talking about an elephant. So you could cross that out. If your person doesn't like writing in your Bible, then cross it out because they wrote it in your Bible. So you probably should get rid of that. Okay, chapter 41, it'll say possibly a... No, possibly a what? No, crocodile, right? Possibly a crocodile. You go and check it. I can't imagine that you, maybe some of you do, but usually it's always in every single little commentary note down at the bottom of them thinking that. And originally, I think that probably came, I don't know, and maybe you can speak this to me later, probably just came from people, you know, thinking the dinosaurs probably weren't real. I mean, we have problems. We've had problems in the church in the past about just rejecting things that we think that, you know, we just have this idea that we maybe know a lot more about the ancient world than we probably do. And so sometimes we just reject things out of hat, and I think that might be some, maybe a remnant of that. The word, go ahead.
It's more of the theistic evolution, really, that they just don't think man and dinosaurs could have done the same thing.
Okay. More of the, you said theistic evolution. They just don't believe that animals and the dinosaurs could be at the same time. That God, you know, created things, but used evolution as the process, and that dinosaur, man came way before dinosaurs. They couldn't have been at the same time period. So, obviously Adam didn't give him the name dinosaur, right? This guy did. Richard Owen. It's not the Richard Owens that we know. 1842, we came up with dinosaur. Dinos is terrible, and Soros is lizard, even though it's somehow vanished from the screen. So dinosaur means terrible lizard. And this is what the name has stuck. It's a pretty cool name. And we can make cartoons like the Flintstones over it. And in all history, there's dragons. There's the history of dragons. That's what they're called. Of course, it's called dragon in Book of Revelation also. All ancient references refer to a lot of fire-breathing dragons, actually. And you already know that they found some remnants of dinosaurs that they think actually have chambers that actually produced, you know, kind of fire kind of things. We had the Bombardier beetle, which kind of does the same thing. Kind of produces it in a chamber, some caustic chemicals. Hydrogen peroxide, by the way, is one of those things, and it ejects it out. There are cave drawings that show dragons. All the explorers, Herodotus, Marco Polo, Alexander the Great, they all reference dragons. You can read some pretty interesting accounts, really descriptive accounts of these dragons that they came across and what they did. And whether or not that some of that is probably fable, but there's a lot of fables that are based in some kind of a truth also. A major reason for the fascination with dinosaurs is because of the size. Why are they so big? Well, not all of them are big. The average size dinosaur, people think, is probably about the size of a sheep, but that's not very interesting. We want the really, 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 really big ones. Why were those so big? And one thing is that reptiles usually, you know, tend to grow until they die. They're not like us. We get to a certain height and we're pretty much done. But reptiles usually tend to grow until they die. If they lived a lot longer back in that unknown kind of environment, then they could have gotten pretty big. I used to have an iguana named Chico, and it was about 4 foot long. It was a big iguana, 4 foot long from the head all the way to the tail. And Bobby here, you remember Chico, don't you? Yeah. I went to Eminence 1 week. I had Clifford watch it for the week, and then I came back and a week later it died. I don't know how that happened. It's a correlation there. But Clifford loved that iguana. And it's actually buried over here in the backyard, a couple blocks over in the backyard of that thing. Someone's going to dig that up someday and think, whoa, a dinosaur right here in the backyard. That's amazing. I should have put a saddle on it right before I buried it. Why not think about doing that? The question really is, why was everything big? I mean, we find fossils of a lot of things, that were dragonflies that are like the size of birds, and 8-foot-long beavers. I mean, that beaver park, that would have been terrifying, with the big things. And it even says that men were what? Giants. Men were giants, Genesis 6:1-8. There's one thing I just want to address on this real quick, and sometimes, you know, there's so many things that you don't ever quite hear. There is a kind of a problem with some of the dinosaurs, the really, really big ones, there's a problem. There's actually a dinosaur size paradox. I don't know how many of you have heard this. I was when I was talking to Clint a couple weeks ago, I go, there's a problem with dinosaur size. And Clint said, yes, the cube square law. I'm like, okay, good. So he knew all about it. And this is goes clear back to 1638, where Galileo said there's actually kind of limits on sizes that you can have. And Nikki said I'd spend too much time on this. I'm going to show him. I'm just going to go through this and whether you understand or not. You can talk to me about that later. But if I have a 1x1x1 like foot cube, well, the height is 1 foot, right? The area, let's talk about the area of the bottom. It'd be like the area of my feet. Okay, the area of the bottom is 1 times 1, right? 1 foot squared. And the volume is length times height times width, right? 1 foot cubed, okay? So if we scale things, and a lot of times they use, the Lilliputians and the, what is that? Gulliver's Travels, is that what it's from? Lilliputians and then the, they were the little ones, right?
Yeah.
Whatever. You remember the story that how they had these, I can't remember what the scale was. They were like 10 times taller, and then they were like 1/10 times taller or something like this. And they always use that as an example because that could not happen. Physics does not allow that to happen. If we make something like 2 times taller, if we make something 2 times taller, then or we scale it by twice the size, then the height is going to be 2 feet. What happens to the area underneath? 2 times 2 would be 4 square feet. And what happens to volume? 2 times 2 times 2 is 8 square feet. So here, and when we started, we had an area that was like 1 to 1 of the volume. Now the volume is twice the area. And if we go 3 times taller, we're going to have a height of 3 feet. We're going to have an area down below. 3 times 3 is 9 feet squared. And we're going to have 3 times 3 times 3 is 27 cubic feet. Well, density plays a part in this. Density is mass over volume. So what we're doing when we're changing our volume, making it our bigger and bigger and bigger, we're also making our mass, our weight, bigger and bigger and bigger too. The problem is that the volume goes up a lot faster than the area that the weight is on. That makes sense? And that's a problem. Which means eventually, depending on the strength, or and there's a whole list you can go to different strengths of different things, but like bone and flesh is what we're talking about here, you get to a point where the weight is so, yes, it's stronger because the area is bigger, it's stronger, but the weight of it becomes so much that it will collapse under its own weight. It can't do anything. And generally, if it's going to be a lot bigger, it's going to start being kind of more lethargic, really, and not very fast anyway. But we have some problems, and there's a lot of people that, some people just ignore this problem, totally just ignore it. Clear back from Galileo said that we got problems with this. We have some dinosaur fossils that are pretty big, and we kind of almost think almost too big, so we kind of got to explain how they could have even existed. And there's a lot of different theories on that, and the thing is, we don't really quite know about that original environment, do we? You know, there's a lot of speculation, and this isn't by creationists, by the way. This is a dinosaur-sized paradox for scientists. This isn't a creation thing. I hope I didn't get that impression. So there's theories out there that aren't by creationists that are by other people about that possibly it was a thicker atmosphere, like a lot of water in the atmosphere, and so it made it more of a buoyant kind of thing. What's the biggest animal that has ever existed? The blue whale, still here. Right? It's way bigger than any of the biggest dinosaurs we have. What happens when a blue whale comes up on shore? All of its bones break. It can't support itself at all. It can't. It just collapses. The lungs collapse. Everything collapses in just a big... You can't. There's nothing you can do with it. And so, why wouldn't this happen to some of the maybe biggest dinosaurs? Well, there's a whole bunch of different things. They even talk about maybe gravity was less, and there's a whole bunch of weird theories out there. If you go to Job 41 and 42, what you might notice something about both of those things. They lived in water or marshy land. Both of them, they're referenced to that. And I tend to think that because we would not ever know this, but it'd be boring if all the brontosaurus and all these things were technically just kind of always in the water with their heads up out of the water. And sometimes you see drawings like that because they think that they could have done that. But I think, generally speaking, they probably were more marsh land and water kind of kind of beast. That would make sense, at least the really, really big ones. And they probably might not have been very fast, but if you were close, they could have chomped you probably pretty good, probably pretty strong, but they would probably not be able to chase you around very much. But even they were probably fearful. Okay, so good enough. I did spend more time on that than I should have probably. So the question isn't really what happened to dinosaurs, what happened to all life? Right? What happened to all life? I mean, we have a mass extinction. And there we go. And I found the answer, by the way, to that question, that age-old question, what happened to all these things, you know, that evolutionists even trying to explain what happened to it. And I found it actually in writing, what happened to these things. Let's read it. Every living thing that moved on the earth perished. There it is, right there. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm over the earth, and all mankind. Everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. Every living thing on the face of the earth was wiped out. How many times do I got to tell you? Men and animals and the creatures that move along the ground and the birds of the air were wiped from the earth. Only Noah was left and those with him in the ark. How many humans survived?
Eight.
How many of each kind of animal survived? Yeah, it was a mumbly answer there. So, what was it? Two of the unclean? Seven pairs of the clean? Does everybody think that's right? Because to me, this is an open question. I'm not quite sure. It says they came in sevens, and there's the translation there is, in my opinion, is kind of difficult to say for sure. I know some people, in fact, some of your translations probably even have pairs, maybe in parentheses, seven pairs. I don't know what I believe really on that for sure. I kind of lend myself to thinking that it was two unclean and seven clean. Seven clean animals. It says it's sevens by male and female, and we would have that. We'd have three pairs, right? And we'd have an extra. What would be the point of that extra? It's not going to be able to mate unless it mates with one of the other ones. Okay, that's the. You know, I always think that, you know, too bad would be that one. It's like, you know, I made it on the ark. Oh no, you know, you get off the ark, and what does it say that Noah did? He took of all the clean animals and he made a sacrifice and I don't know if that's I'm just throwing that out. I have no idea whether it could very well be 14 of them, seven pairs. I don't know. In my mind, I kind of like the six objects to replenish the earth and the one devoted to God. I kind of like that. That seems to be kind of a theme in the Bible. So it could be. Could not be, and if you disagree with me, then you can go talk to my elders about it. My elders, my father there. So, okay. By the way, clean and unclean. How'd they know? Clean and unclean. Think that this clean and unclean was later added?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep. Possibility. Anybody else on that? Because I'm basically just asking this question to see what people say. So. Right. You know, Noah didn't bring these animals. It says in chapter 7 twice that these animals came to Noah. So so God had them come to Noah, and so you know God can put anything on He wants and designate them as what He wants. But if he had them come to Noah, then maybe Noah got a vision of what's clean and what's unclean in that case. I tend to kind of think that there was some information given to Cain and Abel. I tend to believe Abel's sacrifice was offered by faith. It was more excellent. It was more excellent because it's what God wanted. I think that that's what I feel that that's the case. We know that, you know, Cain offered basically vegetation, right, produce, and that Abel offered from his flock. And that's not the first time that that's happened. You know, earlier on, when Adam and Eve knew that they were naked, they tried to cover their sin. What did they use to try to cover it? What, in their opinion, was the best thing to cover their sin? Vegetation, right? And was it okay? For whatever reason, I don't know. I mean, we don't know a lot of these things, but it wasn't okay. And God gave them skins. And sometimes I wonder if there was a shocking demonstration to them, because the devil had just told them that there would be no death. They didn't even really know, what is that? What is death? You know, can you imagine seeing death for the first time ever? Being the first, you know? And so to me, I wonder if there was a real demonstration there on that, on what their sin had caused. What a devastating thing. Is it devastating to you to know what your sin has caused? It caused a death, didn't it? Caused a death. And that theme goes through too. So all those things are things also you can talk to my elders about if you'd like. Because I don't really know. But you just kind of, we speculate about some of these things, and it's interesting to discuss. Was there enough room on the ark? Yes, there was. There was probably enough room on the ark because God said the ark was going to be built in a certain specifications. God sent the animals to there, and so I know that God put the animals on the ark. They were all on there. Now, if we want to start speculating and stuff and doing some other things, I think we could probably make good scientific arguments, logical arguments that, yes, there was probably room. If you're going to take all these animals on there, I mean, what are you going to take? Am I going to take Grandpa and Grandma Dinosaur? Probably not, because what's going to happen afterwards? What was the first command that God gave them, just like God gave Adam and Eve at the beginning? Reproduce and replenish the earth. And so we're probably, I would imagine, this is my human wisdom, not that it has anything to do with what God wanted, but I would imagine they would have probably been pretty, I would have taken baby things. You know, in a year and 10 days, by the time we get off the ark, they're all going to be perfectly right on, ready to do this. They're going to be right at the right age for this. You know, a year and 10 days later. So I would imagine smaller, you would have taken, it seems to me that you would actually be taking smaller types of animals anyway. I'm not going to take this humongous dinosaur when I can take the baby dinosaur that's like this tall, or even the size of a giraffe or something. So I don't know about that either. So see, now that I'm getting to speculation now. So okay, one thing we have in biology is called a bottleneck event. Population size, and we see it just drops off. This is just a bottleneck event graph. It's not necessarily the one. And when it happens, a lot of times we're going to have a lot of things that aren't going to make it in the end. There's going to be a lot of extinction that occurs of things, and there's going to be recovery. We're going to have certain animals that are going to make it back. But this was a major bottleneck event, the bottleneck event of all time. And so there were a lot of things that I believe, especially in the post-flood world, which I think was amazingly different and much more harsh and not nearly as perfect as it was before, with God's creation, that there would be a lot of things that probably could not survive. And I feel that's probably what happened to dinosaurs. I don't think the dinosaurs probably had very good living conditions after this point. And who knows, you know, if it's an unclean animal, as soon as one of them dies before they have children, there it is, gone. You know, there's only two for the unclean. So this was a major bottleneck event. And of course, we go to Genesis 5 and we read the lengths of their lifespans, and what do we see with even human life? Drastically drops off. We're like 900,000 years, you know, 969 Methuselah, or 930 was Adam. And then, you know, as soon as we go past Noah, we drop down to the 600s. And then later on, we kind of drop down to the 200s and stuff. And then we get to Joseph, and we're like 110. And it just kind of drops off real quickly there.
There's also in Genesis 9 the idea that God allowed all creation to eat, to become omnivores.
That's true. Yep. Which afterwards, he gave man all things to eat. Right.
Which would just support what you're saying, that the extinction rate could have been pretty high.
Right. And part of this all too is once the sin of man came in, you know, what the devil said, you will not die, but what? What's the reality? We do die, and we decay. We're decaying. We're not as amazing as Adam and Eve were. They were different specimens than us. We have much more. Our genetic code has been decaying ever since then. And we'll probably talk about that here in just a little bit more. Let's just run through some real... Did it rain before the flood? Well, yes, it did. How could there be a flood? Did it rain in the... Was there just a flood? There was no rain? Come on. No, there was... I'm talking about the time period before. Did it rain before the flood? Okay. I tend to think it probably didn't. I guess I'm not overly sure when God says, I'm going to send rain on the earth to Noah. I mean, in my reading, he doesn't seem surprised, but it could have been. But in Hebrews, we read that by faith, things not yet seen. But I mean, there's a lot of stuff that, a worldwide destroying flood could have been what we're talking about there rather than just rain. This is just a question that was kind of thrown out there earlier in the week, so I thought we'd do it. We don't know for sure. Genesis 2:6 says that the streams watered, but that was watering the Garden of Eden, and that we know they were taken out of that. So, I don't know. Where did all the water go? I think I mentioned some of this in passing in a while ago. Where did all the water go? It's still here, right? It's in the oceans. And I think I've talked about that if everything was flattened out, that the water would cover the whole globe up to about 9,000 feet. And we discussed Mount Everest. Well, Mount Everest is 29,000 feet. So how could it have done that? Well, Mount Everest wasn't that high at that time. It was brought up, and the valleys were brought down. And if we go to... And I said to just look this up on your own, but now I've got to put it on here because I think it's really important. Psalm 104, 5 through 10. Who laid the foundation of the earth, and it should not be removed forever? Thou coverest it with the deep as with a garment. The water stood above the mountains. As they rebuked, they fled. At the voice of thy thunder, they hasted away. They go up by the mountains. They go down by the valleys unto the place which thou hast founded for them. Thou hast set a bound that they may not pass over, that they turn not again to cover the earth. He sent up the springs into the valleys which run among the hills. What about Pangaea? And I chose Pangaea on purpose because everybody know what Pangaea is supposed to be? Like the one continent, right? And there's a whole bunch of other continents. There's Laurasia is the only one I can ever remember. And there's one starts with a G. Anybody know that one? Like Guandana Land or something. I don't know. There's more than that even. There's a whole bunch of them where they think that over millions of years they went apart, came back in a new formation, went apart, came back in a new formation. This isn't Pangaea. I put up a thing here to show you. Without the oceans, you find a Earth that has some really big scars all the way around. It looks like a baseball, actually a baseball seam that goes all the way around the Earth. I think these are scars. I think these are literal scars. What talks about the fountains did what? Fountain of the depth did what? They broke, right? They broke up. The windows of heaven, I don't know. But they were opened, and a lot of water came down, and a lot of water came up. And I think the flood, we'd almost be better talking about the volcano period. Because I think we're talking a lot about volcanoes and things with water coming up, the upheaval of ground, and the flood is never the peaceful picture that we draw in our little kids' classes. It's not. They were in a big floating box, and chaos. Turmoil that was occurring. And I just chose this one in particular because Pangaea, Pan means all and Gea means earth, all earth. But there's a lot of things that this Pan prefix comes into, which I kind of like to discuss a little bit too, and hopefully in a little bit of time. Genesis 1:9 even says, and God said, let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. So that almost kind of, you can almost read that a long time ago and say, maybe at one time it was just all one land. I mean, I just feel that what we have now is the result of the flood. When the flood waters abated, now we have what we have, and we see the continents, are moving away at 2 centimeters a year or whatever, and what do? Principle uniformitarianism. Stick it in there and say that, okay, now it has to be this long that the continents have been drifting. Well, I think they're probably drifting at probably that rate, but they did most of their drifting in just a little bit of time. I think this is probably what happened, and it seems to be pretty good scientific evidence on that also. There is a reference in Genesis 10:25 about Peleg. I don't know if you've ever. It says his name was Peleg because it was at the time the earth was divided, and I don't personally think that's probably when this happened at the flood. Peleg comes a little bit later. I think Peleg, when we're talking there, I think we're probably talking about the Tower of Babel, and we have Genesis 11. That they were separated because of their languages, they went off and they were separated. I think that's probably what it's referring to. Although it could kind of do something a little bit with the earth, because I also believe, and we'll talk about it next, is that after in the bad environment, in the end, I do believe there was probably an ice age that came in pretty quick with a lot of ice and bad things. And if that's the case, when God spreads them out, you know, they could have went across some ice and that could have melted later, and they could have been actually divided by like earth divided. But I don't want to read too much into that. I tend to think that it correlates really well with God and the Tower of Babel and spreading them out. So I think it's more of just a separation of the languages. What about the ice age? Job 38:29-30 says, out of whose womb came the ice and the hoary frost of heaven? Who hath gendered it? The waters are hid as with a stone, and the face of the deep is frozen. I believe there probably was an ice age, and it just doesn't happen. You know, we don't have to say that the glaciers are moving that slow. Everything is how it has to. They have to be doing it slow. It's all gradualism, and I don't think it has to quite be on that. Okay, where did Cain get his wife? I had a lot of questions that were put in this. I'm supposed to cover this week, and I'm going to do them all on this last day. Where did Cain get his wife? Okay, we have a lot of things, and we can read through it, and eventually, I had a lot to say on this, actually, even though it seems like it's a fairly silly question, but we have a lot to say on it. We're not going to say it all. In Genesis 5:3-5, when Adam lived 130 years, he had a son in his own likeness and his own image, and he named him Seth, and I believe that happened after, because of what they said, Seth has replaced Abel. So we know that this happened. So we have 130 years, and in that time frame, before the 130 years is when this event with Cain and Abel happened. It says Adam lived 800 years and had other sons and daughters. I believe that they had probably had several sons and daughters at the time. How come they're not mentioned? Well, it wasn't pertinent to the story, was it? The story is about Cain and Abel and what happened. You know, was there another brother there? You know, I tend to probably not think so, maybe, at the time. But, you know, there could have been. There could have been other brothers. They just wouldn't have been. They weren't related to the story. Cain didn't get mad at Brother Bob and kill him. He got upset at Abel and killed him. And so, clearly, there's brothers and sisters. And a lot of times in the evolution, they like to ask this question because they know the only answer you can say is that it's a sister or possibly maybe a niece or something. But as soon as they do that, they go, well, isn't that immoral? Like, you're going to tell me that this, you're going to talk about immorality and this. But they like to do that. And, you know, we go about 2,000 years later, 1,800 years later, and we have Abraham. Who did Abraham marry? It was half-sister, right? But we still kind of have this happening. And it's another 400 years till we get to the law about you're not to approach any close relative to have sexual relations. And there's where is it in there? Oh, yes. Verse 5. Keep my decrees and laws, for the man who obeys them will live by them. At this point down the road, we've decayed. And what do we need to actually survive and have productive offspring? We can't have the close relationships anymore because of the Punnett square. If I marry my sister now, then we have some of the same bad deleterious mutations, and we're not going to have one of them be able with, you know, to cover the other one up. And so it's going to be a problem. You're going to start having children that are not going to be healthy and that can die. But we know we could go about 2,000 years or so before God implemented this law, because it wasn't needed. But now it is needed, so that you may live by them. We need these laws by the time Moses gives this. Romans 8:20-21. We've talked about this. You know, creation was subjected to frustration. It was decaying. We all marry our relation, right? We all marry our relation, just how close. In over 2,000 years, the gene pool had decayed enough to warrant some rules and regulations that we're talking about there. What about the origin of races? Race is not a biblical term. It's not a biblical term. You've seen where the term race has come, haven't you? Haven't I given you enough quotes where the term race comes from? It came out of evolution. It came from Ernst Haeckel. It came from Charles Darwin. It came from Thomas Huxley. That's what their goal was. They were a more evolved race. They are lower races that should be exterminated, according to Margaret Sanger. Race is not a biblical term. It's an evolutionary concept. We have, in the Bible, we have kinds, which were animals, and we have nations, which were human. Genesis 9:1, then God blessed Noah and his sons, saying to them, be fruitful and increase in number and fill the earth. And the sons of Noah came out of the ark in Genesis 9, 8, that was it. I'm skipping ahead. Genesis 9, 18 through 19 said, the sons of Noah came out of the ark were Shem, Ham, and Japheth. And Ham was the father of Canaan. These were the three sons of Noah, and from them came the people who were scattered over the earth. And still today, we talk about the Japhetic and the Hamitic and the Semitic, right? From Ham, Shem, and Japheth. We still kind of can organize them according to these three boys that came off of, or men, probably at that time, that came off of the ark. And so the whole language, in Genesis 11:1, the whole world had one language and a common speech. So we're not talking about different kinds of animals, we're talking about different nations of people made in the image of God. A man of any nation can marry. And you can get a variety, a whole range from very, very white to very, very black on this. But it's just a variety on these things. And this can happen. We can have kind of changes in skin color based on where you go, because the skin color is based on a chemical that we all have called melanin, right? And they have these melanocytes that make this melanin, and some of us have more of it. And some of us, my wife has a lot more of it than I do. And black people have a lot more of it than really, really white people will have it. But the only difference is really in the amount of melanin. And if you are in a region over time, if you're in a region, we want to block the ultraviolet light, don't we? Well, some of it we do, right? Because if you get a lot of ultraviolet light, it can cause severe damage to you and you will die. This is what can happen. So anybody that would be more black-skinned or darker-skinned in an environment like that would survive better. Anybody that would be farther away from the equator, that would be in another environment, the whiter you are, the better you would survive, because what would we use the ultraviolet light for? Our skin does what with it? It makes vitamin D, which we must have. And so even in today's society, we have, you know, the World Health Organization puts out the things that, you know, anybody that's dark skin, and they actually have a scale of darkness. So the black people would definitely fit into that. And then anybody, there's certain dark scale people over like 36 degree latitude. If you are going to live there, you need to supplement yourself with vitamin D. You have to do that. If you're within that zone, you're going to get enough sun that you're going to be able to, your body's going to be able to make the vitamin D. So it's not a real mystery on how we can have variation within all of us. But any person from one nation, or a black person and a white person, could marry, and I hope their goal is to raise godly offspring. That's what it comes down to. It shouldn't be that problem. And I'm not saying that Race really came a lot from evolution, but you know, it came from the church too, a long time ago. I remember hearing people talk about the curse of Ham, which wasn't really the curse of Ham, it was the curse of Canaan, right? And talks about that those people became slaves to everybody else. That's why, you know, the black people are supposed to be slaves. This language ought not to be. This isn't right. Acts 17:26 says, from one man he made every nation of men, that they should inhabit the whole earth. And Malachi 2:10 says, have we not all one Father? Hath not one God created us? Why do we deal treacherously, every man against his brother, by profaning the covenant of our fathers? I'm going to skip this part. I wanted to talk about the population problem. Did you know there's a population problem? What are we going to do? What are we going to do? What was the first command that God gave man? Populate. So why do we think that there's ever a problem with something that God has given us a command for? And I was going to get real mathematical here, and we can do a kind of geometric population rate where we can put in a original population for P and then figure out what the population would be later. If we put 1 plus the rate, right now the rate's like 1.1%, we think. Population, this math is really dumb. It's totally subjective and we really don't even know. But we can try to extrapolate N as the number of years that you can take to go from one population number to the next. And we could extrapolate, and I just punched in some numbers on this. We have 7 billion people right now. We started with 8. If we do the current rate, which we should, because we're principally uniformitarianism, right? Or do we just do that when we want to? We'll just do 1%. I put that in there, and that only says that we could have got to 7 billion right now only 2,000 years ago. Well, I know that that can't be right, because we have genealogy to tell that we have, and we have written record that goes back farther than that. So if we do it the opposite way and I figure out the rate, we can have a rate of about 0.5%, which is very, very reasonable to a lot of people, 0.5%, and we can go from 8 to 7 billion in about 4,410 years, which is pretty good, pretty close. Of course, if we're going to put in like a million, I just put in a million, that's all I did for the rate, then we would have to have a rate of 0.002%. And I started them with 2 people. I don't know where they got the 2 people, but I started them, their evolutionary part, with 2 people. The danger of pantheism. Pantheism is all a god. Basically, the nature is your god, is what it is. And it's a problem, and if you don't think it is a problem, how many of you wouldn't watch the movie Avatar? It's a problem. That movie was a pantheistic movie. And what was the moon that they lived on? Pandora, right? Pandora. And that's the... Pandora is the Greek god's Eve. They created her and everybody worshipped her. There's a lot of things that I want to talk about. This, the Gaia hypothesis, James Lovelock, that the whole earth is an organism and it's self-sustaining, which I had in my textbook when I was in school. I remember exactly the Gaia hypothesis. Mother Nature, we refer to Mother Nature. Don't refer to Mother Nature. Don't do that. That falls into pantheism. Of course, Avatar, we're talking about, it's a ripoff of the Pocahontas movie, if you've ever seen that. It's what it is, Pocahontas movie. And he bows down, remember the scene? He bows down to the mother tree, and he says, and he's praying to her, and he says, "We have killed our mother. There is no more green on our earth." And of course, we could talk about global warming and everything else that all, I think, just fits right into this. The starlight problem, it's not really a problem. I can't go into that, or otherwise it would be terrible. But the Lord is the true God. He is the living God, the eternal King. When he is angry, the earth trembles. The nations cannot endure the wrath. Tell them this: these gods who did not make the heavens and the earth will perish from the earth and from under the heavens. But God made the earth by his power. He founded the world by his wisdom and stretched out the heavens by his understanding. I'd like to have some of that understanding and kind of know how he did that. But he took it and he stretched it out. This isn't the only reference where we have where it stretched it out. And this is exactly what we feel in physics happens in the cosmos. It is stretching. Things aren't just all moving away from us. The space within the things are moving, are being stretched. And therefore, things that are farther away seem to be moving faster farther away than things that are actually closer to us, which would happen if things were stretched. Now, we then apply the principle of uniformitarianism and say how far they had to have been, how long it would take from light to get to us if we're going to apply that. But if God took everything and stretched it out, what would that make it look like? We could see light that is not actually, hasn't traveled as far as we think that it has traveled. And I'd like to talk a whole lot more about that particular thing, because in my class in general relativity, we got to this point where they talked about inflationary theory, which was awesome, because there's a lot of problems with understanding the cosmos on how this could be this temperature and this could be the same temperature that far apart. How could that possibly be? And so they come up with inflationary theory, which means in the first nanosecond, this went from here to here, in a stretching mechanism, which just, I wish I had more time to talk about that, but I don't. So we're going to move on. Okay, should we do a demo? Okay. In the Midwest, we have, let's see, this one could be a little bit more. Can anybody see that? You'll be able to see it.
eventually, I think, if I can get it to work. In the Midwest, we have grain bin explosions, right? And a lot of times what happens is people are kind of getting confused because, like, you know, grain or corn, you know, will that burn? Well, yeah, it will, but it doesn't really. If I just try to set wheat or things on fire, sometimes it won't burn as well. But if we get churn things up in a grain bin and we get all dust, or even it used to be a problem with bakeries with flour that was in the air, you know, if there was a little ignition source, it could all go up because you're increasing the surface area and the fire, the energy can get to every single little piece all at the same time. You can even do this with just a log. You can have a log burn for days. But if you just chop it up into super fine powder and throw it in the fire, it's pretty exciting. It'll burn the whole log. All the energy will be released all at the exact same time. And so we have these grain bin explosions. A lot of times they happen in kind of cascades where it'll shake and more dust in the air and it'll go boom, 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 boom like that down. It'll have more than one explosion. And so I'd like to simulate a grain bin explosion for you today, if we can. So the fire chief's not here today, right? He was here on the day that I had put the smoke up into the... Yeah, okay. Apparently he was walking back behind here when I did that. That's not good. So, what I have here is my simulated grain bin. And I have some powder that I won't tell you what it is. And if I can get it, if I just try to set it on fire, I could get it to kind of slowly burn, but it wouldn't do much. But if I can aerate it, really get it mixed up and put it out there, then it can really, really go. So I have in here, in this bucket, I have a candle, which we're going to light. Put that down there. Then I have a hole that I drilled a little hole in the bucket and I put a funnel in it. And the funnel's attached to this thing right here. I'm going to put the powder into that funnel. I'm going to put the lid on it, and what am I going to do? I'm going to blow through. It's going to take all the grain dust up into the air, and then it's going to ignite, and we should be able to blow the top. Should I put a lot in or just a little? All the old people said a little, all these people said a little. Okay. And sometimes I have a little trouble getting to work, and that makes it scarier. Be a science teacher, people. You can look like me. It's cool. It's just cool. But I put this on here, and I'm going to blow through it, and we're going to see what happens here. So are you ready for the lights? That probably good enough. Let's hope this works. Uh-oh. This is the nervous part. Let's try it again. I did this 4 times last night. It worked perfect every time. I knew this would happen. Maybe I should put a little more in. Okay, try it again. Here we go. Might be that big, but a little scary there. Nothing's on fire. We're good. So, my point on this, and I have a scripture that I kind of want to look at, but my point on this is today's the last day of us being together. And when I was your age, and I used to come to these meetings, this was a hard day for me. Because you... And maybe you don't feel this way, but you spend time with people that are fun to spend time with and that share your belief and your hope. And now you got to go back to spend time with people that might not. And so in a couple weeks, you're going to be sitting in your classroom with your science teacher. And you're going to be thinking back on this week, I hope, and thinking about things and how you want to, hopefully, stand up for the things that you've believed. We can't tell the message of Jesus if we all stay here. We'd like to stay here. And that's our eventual goal, to be all together and stay together, right? But until that time, we have work to do. And we can't stay here. We got to go back. And we got to spread this. And we got to help. And we got to stand up for what we believe in. We can't let people tell us what to believe in. We need to spread. We have the Spirit in us. We are aerated. We are armed. We are ready to go back. And we need to spread the word. I have a passage for you that I would like you to consider. It's one of my all-time favorites, and it helped me as I was growing up, because this passage that we thought, a lot of times we read about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, and we think about them as being men. I think these are boys. Probably some boys, some of you are probably even maybe older than them. 15 to 18 maybe, when they were taken into captivity. And I love what they do here. They were supposed to bow down, and what did they say? It says, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego replied to the king. The king was saying, why don't you bow down? He said, they replied to the king, O Nebuchadnezzar, we do not need to defend ourselves before you in this matter. If we are thrown into the blazing furnace, the God we serve is able to save us from it, and he will rescue us from your hand, O king. But even if he does not, that's the good one. Right? You go to God in prayer, and no matter what, you know he hears you. Even if he does not, we want you to know, King, that we will not serve your gods or worship the image of gold that you have set up. We will not bow down to evolution. We will not bow down to these things that you are spouting, because I have a belief. I know what the Lord has told me. And I'm going to be brave about it. And I'm going to stand up for what's right. I would like you to consider being like these three boys in your life when you go back these next couple of weeks. Please consider that. You can have your break. I really enjoyed this time, and I do want to shout out one thing. I appreciate my son's work on this. He's not my only begotten, but I am well pleased at him.